Grand rising, kings, queens, gods and goddesses. I am Kimberly Michael. This is That White Girl. And thanks for showing up. I appreciate y'all. Every time you hit that play button, I'm filled with gratitude. And today I'm excited for a multitude of reasons, but I have the privilege and honor, as always, of having Jeremy Bonner on my show. He is a podcast host himself. He has a podcast called The Teacup, and we're going to talk about it and hopefully talk about how we met. Jeremy, what's going on, sir?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm having mad problems hearing you, though, so give me just a second. I'm not sure what happened with my volume, but it's a whole problem right now, honestly. Yeah, but you know how it goes. We might have to start over, honestly.
It's all good.
Oh, and then there you are. So, I can totally hear you now. I don't know what happened, so not about to edit any of that out. We're just leaving it. I don't.
Okay.
So, how are you this morning? What's going on? What's good? Tell me again how you are.
Hey, I'm blessed. You know, I'm happy to be on the show, and I really appreciate you having me on. So, I'm doing all right.
Well, I'm glad that you showed up. Can we talk about how we, I don't want to say met, but I mean, I guess that's the way it goes now. Can we talk about how we met? Or started talking, or
sure, yeah. Like, I mean,
how we in this place where you're on my podcast?
Sure, yeah. I feel like everyone has a certain aura, a certain energy about them, and you know, on Facebook it makes these suggestions like, yeah, you should be in touch with this person, you should be friends with this person. So I gave it a shot, and I watched a little bit of your material, and I liked what I saw, and so I subsequently ended up, you know, adding you. And then here recently, I wanted to do a show about surviving sexual assault. And so I put out a post and you responded to it. So from there, we just start talking. And I think, you know, we're building a beautiful friendship. And you have an interesting story to tell. And that's kind of where we are, you know?
Yes, yes. Which is, you know, case in point, I get a lot of grief from a lot of people, like, you know, you can't talk to everybody and you can't be friendly to everybody, but you never know who somebody is,
right?
You don't know their story, you don't know their journey, you don't necessarily, other than what they show you. But I'm just saying, like, you know, everybody's got some kind of story, you know.
That's right.
There used to be a whole, I ain't gonna mention her name because I don't even like her, but it was on a talk show, and I ain't gonna give her no love. And there was a group, an entity, a company. I mean, I don't know who they were, but they basically came on the talk show and just took random people out of the audience. And said, we want you to tell us your story. Every single one of them were like, I don't have a story. You know, like, I just have this life that I've lived. Like, I don't really have anything spectacular. I don't do anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
But at the end, they showed these little short clippets of this person and their story, and it ended up being this whole story. They were all amazed by it. Like, they didn't even believe it themselves that they had this story in them. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is, you know, I think you boldly even putting that out on Facebook about the sexual assault thing in itself, you know, was bold. And I was like, he really doing this? Like, really asking us women to, you know, and men, I mean, they're men, I'm sure, sexually assaulted as well. And I did the same, like, you know, I started following your stuff and looking, and you know, and then we had a conversation about your podcast, which, you know, got us here. But, you know, so let's talk about the teacup, like where did it come from? You know, what happened? What made you just get up one day and be like, this is what I'm going to do?
Well, you know what? Actually, back in 2017, the brainchild, rather, from 2017. I was working a job that seemed to be like, you know, just like it just seemed like I was just hitting the wall, right? It really wasn't going anywhere. And so I just started using my imagination. And I said, what if we had a place where a safe space where people could tell their story from all walks of life in the hopes that it would unite people and promote wellness in society. And I said, well, what would I call the show? Truth, knowledge, unity, and pride, right? And that's something I think that everyone has. Everyone has a truth. Everyone has a certain type of knowledge, you know, and in the hopes that it would promote unity and that it would spark pride within us. So that's why I ended up calling the show Teacup. But yeah, that's really the focus of the show. And so far we have about 4 or 5 episodes up, talking about various things. Uh-huh. So yeah, that's where it came from.
I love it. And, you know, I've listened to a couple episodes and we've had this conversation, like, you just have the voice for it. You know, some people have, you know, I guess a voice, and it's not a radio voice, you know, but it's a voice, you know, and the fact that you are willing to have, I don't know if you're ready, but hopefully you are. You're about to have some really tough conversations with some women.
Well, yeah, I didn't post it looking for a rose garden. Mm-hmm. I wanted that difficult conversation because, you know, I'm a person that believes that if you're going to do something, then you got to go all out with it. You know what I mean? I wanted the tough topics. I wanted the ugly truths that people that in society don't want to talk about. I think it's funny that we as men, you know, when sexual assault comes up, we all say, we don't know anybody who's a rapist. We don't know anybody who sexually assaults anyone. Mm-hmm. And yet it keeps happening to men and women and boys and girls. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's time to actually talk about it so that we can take the power away from it. Because when there's a secret, the power is in the fact that it's a secret, right? When you put it out there in the open, it kind of steals the energy away from it. Mm-hmm. So that it gives the person who has experienced this crime the ability to say, hey, it happened to me, it can happen to anyone, and we're gonna make certain that it stops happening to people by telling the story, the signs to look out for. That's part of why I wanted to do it. I'm not a victim of sexual assault, and those people who come on my show are not paid. I'm not paid to have the story told. Mm-hmm. It's truly just a labor of love. I just want good things to happen to people. I want evil things to stop happening to people. So that's why I started this most recent series called Survivor.
And, you know, I can't disagree with anything that you've said. I mean, at the end of the day, it needs to be spoken at least out loud by the women. I agree that it releases some of the energy. It's funny because I was before our appointment for this podcast, I did another podcast with just me, and I talked about the throat chakra. And I think that it's important in this situation, of course, it probably covers every chakra, but to be able to speak, you know, because there's probably a possibility that some of these women have never even spoken about it in any public forum or with anybody past themselves or maybe one of their closest friends.
Right.
You know, women have a tendency to, of course, I can only speak on women, you know, keep things to ourselves. Not, I don't think, for the reasons that people think, but so the fact that you're doing this, I mean, it's huge, and I do hope that you understand how important it is that you're giving so many women an opportunity to speak. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you didn't originally plan it on it being a whole series as big as it is, correct?
No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, part of what kind of sparked my interest in doing the show was the fact that on Facebook, I see a lot of negative posts towards men, like black men not loving black women or loving women or treating them right. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what can I do as a labor of love to express that black women and women in general are appreciated and that they are loved and that their voices are heard? And so I thought about doing the show. So I posted the post requesting that someone, not a whole lot of folks, come onto the show and tell me about their experience, and the response was overwhelming. And so I actually had to schedule people out way out until October.
October, I know, I'm on the October list. Which, you know, I'm not surprised by, and at the same time, I'm surprised by, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's really important that you expanded that, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I really want people to understand the first conversation that I had with Jeremy, and he was overwhelmed by the responses. And, you know, you said, you know, like, I just couldn't tell anybody that I had enough people. I couldn't tell anybody no. Like, everybody's story was so different. And, you know, there were so many different platforms, if you will, where the sexual abuse came from. You know what I mean? And you literally, your heart was like, you were pouring your heart. You were like, I think every single person that contacted me needs to be heard.
Right.
And you found a way to make that happen. Like you said, all the way out through October. I mean, you know, people wouldn't necessarily do that. You know what I'm saying? That's a big, huge move for you to really, you know, structure your entire podcast around something so vitally important. Of course, but that you did it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I'm definitely in your corner on this. And, you know, I appreciate that you're doing it. And, you know, I'm grateful for it. And I, people see your heart behind this. You know, you know, about him having a podcast so much. Not anymore. Not in this particular situation.
Right, correct. About
you being in a position to, you know, uplift and possibly and at least allow a platform for some women to heal some wounds, and that's, you know, important. And so while you were talking, you made a comment initially, and if we can touch on it, let's. If we can't, that's cool.
That's but it.
You said that this initially stemmed, you know, from the lack of support and encouragement in this black woman, black man, you know, where we are, where black folks are literally pitted against one another on purpose, you know, whether it's their gender, the color of their skin, the whatever, you know what I mean? Their sexual preference, in one way or in the other, there's division.
Right. Right.
And you said that's where it started, but it kind of expanded beyond that. And I'm just, you know, can we talk about how that went from, you know, that to kind of everybody?
Right. Again? Yeah. So, I mean, I think people don't understand, like, the history of African Americans in the United States. Right. So, you know, of course, everybody knows that a lot of us came over as slaves. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, the Civil War to free us, and then we had segregation and Jim Crow, and then we had the war on drugs, right? Mm-hmm. The war on drugs focused on our communities, but what it did was it also weakened our families, in that black men were incarcerated for distribution or for possession, and given much harsher sentences than their white counterparts, right? Subsequently, this left the woman of the house in a very precarious, very precarious situation, where traditionally where the man would be the provider for the house, mm-hmm. He was no longer able to do that. And so his standing in his own community dwindled, which I believe is a direct contribution to our standing now, why we have so many issues today between each other. And from the inception of this country, there has been this goal to, like you said, separate us, whether it be based on skin color, oh, this person's light skin, this person's dark skin, this person's gay, this person's straight, this person went to this school or went to this. There's always been something that's tried to separate us. And like, again, I did this as a labor of love in the hopes that, well, if I extend an olive branch or olive leaf, maybe we could begin to heal, right? Because there's so much toxicity between each other, between our races, and between our sexes. So I said, well, maybe if we listen to them and find out what they need, women, that is, then we could heal. And I figured, well, this is a situation. Like I said, the teacup is a safe space, so anybody can come on the show and talk about their story. And while sexual assault is something that's ugly, men and women have experienced it. And so if we could create a forum where we could say, you know what, sis, you've been through this, guess what, I've been through this too. We could find somewhat of a common ground, ugly as it is. That was the idea. That was part of the idea. Yeah, I just really want us to heal as a people and to love on each other, but it's very difficult to do that.
I feel you. I feel you on that. And it now it's generational, and I say this all the time. You know, it used to be just the daddies wasn't in the house anymore. You know what I mean? Right. But now we're at a point where daddy's gone, granddaddy gone, the uncle's gone, the cousin's gone. You're talking about generationally, you know, this infrastructure that's being built, and it's like at every avenue. I mean, it's not shocking for me to say this out loud, but I don't understand me understanding this because I'm a white lady. I can see it so deeply. I mean, it's so clear to me that at every avenue the system has broken down the black family,
right?
And they have failed,
right,
in one degree or another to their standards. So they keep pushing a narrative until they're gonna get to the point where, you know, one thing didn't work, you know what I mean?
Right.
So now we've moved on to, you know, other things that they can tear the family apart with. And really now the families are torn, if you will, but they're not together. They're not unified. You know what I mean? So now they just are breaking down black folks in general, whatever way. Because, okay, so we couldn't separate them and let you fight over family. Now we're going to let you fight over what color your skin is. Now we want you to fight over what gender's been broken the most and brutalized the most, and which gender is more safe and unsafe, and what your sexual preference is, as opposed to what we want it to you to, how we want you to define yourself in the community. You know what I mean? Because now laws are being changed and people are, you know, protesting, and people like Brian Stevenson and his team are getting people out of jail that should have never been there in the first place, and then who are incarcerated far too long, those type of things. Now people are starting to see, and men are starting to show up, and, you know, they're not pushing the narrative. But I mean, if you go and Google right now, single fathers, there's a shitload of black single fathers doing the damn thing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I've been dating for almost 5 years, and I'm telling you, I had no idea. I had no idea how many black men are raising their children.
Right.
You know why? That's not the narrative that is pushed.
Right. Exactly.
All of these narratives divide, all of them. And you, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, of course, but, you know, I want to know more from you because I know that you are a history buff. But I know that you are. And, you know, I'm just curious where you think that all started.
Sure. So,
where it stemmed from.
The first anti-miscegenation laws were passed in Virginia back in 1669. I think that you know, this idea. Well, actually, I know. I don't even think this idea of whiteness is fairly new. Because back in the 1600s, everyone worked the fields together. It was no white, black, Hispanic. It wasn't none of that. It was just either you were poor or you were rich, and either you were a slave, free, indentured servant, or you were an owner, right? Mm-hmm. So blacks owned blacks, blacks owned whites, whites owned blacks, indigenous peoples, indigenous people owned people. So at one point, everybody of all shades was working the fields together. Mm-hmm. And after some time, those people said, hey, there's more of us than there are them. You know, why is it that we're being screwed over? You know, mm-hmm. why are we being screwed over by these people who aren't working the fields? You know, why should we work for them for free? So there subsequently is a rebellion called Bacon's Rebellion. And you can always tell if something went well or if something didn't go well, because it's either called a rebellion or a revolution. Typically,
exactly.
So typically, if you win what you want, then it's called a revolution. But if you lose, it's called a rebellion. So these white landowners get together and they come up with this idea. They say, okay, look, what if we separate these people via the color of their skin? So they tell their white slaves, like, look, you guys might not be, or white former slaves, hey, you guys might not be, you know, wealthy like us, but you're white. And so with you being white, there comes certain privileges with that. Here is a badge. You're going to think this sounds very familiar, because it is going to sound very familiar. Here is a badge, here is a gun, and here is a horse. And what you're in charge of are these other slaves. In fact, we're going to make you an overseer of these slaves, okay? Mm. And so, subsequently, the slave patrol is created, and the descendant of the ancestor of the modern police department is the slave patrol.
Wow.
Eventually, we fight this war over slavery, something that should have been handled back when the Constitution was written, but they weren't brave enough to do it because they wanted to make certain that the Union was formed in the first place. Mm-hmm. Little did they know that many years later, the Union would come to a breaking point and would have to fight the war over it. No matter what you say, no matter what people try to say, the Civil War was not about states' rights. And even if it was about states' rights, it was about the states' rights to hold slaves, according to Stephen Alexander, the vice president of the Confederacy. So, after the Civil War is fought, many slaves found themselves unable to provide for themselves, so they went right back into another form of slavery called sharecropping. And those slaves who tried to create communities of color where they would thrive were harassed by a new terrorist organization called the Ku Klux Klan. It was started by a guy named Forrest. I think that was it his first name or last name? It doesn't matter. The guy's name was Forrest, and it was formed to harass communities of color. And so Grant sends troops into the South to quell violence against communities of color. But the United States doesn't garner much support for very long, and so he has to pull troops out of the South. And you have this resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
You have Jim Crow laws and segregation. The first person to die for the formation of the United States, what we call the United States today, was a black man. And so from the very inception of our country, we've always shed blood for this place. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, after World War II and Vietnam, Black people are not afforded benefits like the GI Bill, where you can get houses for a dollar down, right? It's not like that anymore. Well, it's never been like that for us until here recently, where a soldier coming back from World War II, Black soldier coming back from World War II, could not buy a home because he wasn't eligible for the GI Bill. Well, what does that do to a man's psyche who's not able to provide for his family? He's not able to buy a home, which means he cannot produce equity. And if he can't buy a home and produce equity, those taxes, those property taxes that pour into your school board or your district are not there. They're not produced. And so now you have a separation based on education. And if you don't have the right education, then you can't go to the nice school. And if you can't go to the nice school, then you can't get that great job. And so the cycle continues. Mm-hmm. Also, one of the other things that we as a people had to kind of face was something called redlining, where the banks would take a large map and literally take a red marker and say, we're not going to give people under this line we're not going to give them a loan. And so the cycle continued that way.
Right.
Fast forward even now, it still happens in very unique ways with regards to giving out business loans and things like that. That's kind of how the discrimination perpetuates today.
Of course.
I, in 2018, lost a friend to police violence. His name was Botham John. He was sitting in his apartment in Dallas, Texas, when an officer came into his apartment and shot him because she thought that it was her apartment. And it may have been an honest mistake, but it is a behavior that is too common in the United States, where you have a police officer who is white and a victim or suspect that is Black. And in any other circumstance where you would de-escalate normally, you have this officer who ends up killing the person, which doesn't make sense. And sometimes it's even caught on video, like Alton Sterling, or I forget the young man's name who was up in New York selling loose cigarettes. Like any other circumstance, you would not behave like this,
right? Exactly.
But for some reason, it becomes acceptable for a police officer to behave the way that they're behaving. To choke out a man, or to get on top of a man's chest and have positive control of the person, and then kill them, lean on their neck. And so now we found ourselves in a place where we have certain people. Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization, and not those who are actually terrorizing these neighborhoods.
Exactly.
Right. So remember earlier I talked about having overseers in the fields watching over the slaves. Well, that system never really changed. It just changed names. So if you look at the word overseer and you look at the word officer, there is a relation there. Right. So if you're in a nice neighborhood, or if you're in a white neighborhood, the suburbs, then that person might actually be there to protect and serve. And I don't want anyone listening to this podcast to think, oh, Jeremy Bonner doesn't support police officers. No, I support good police officers. I support good policing. I support equity and equality with regards to enforcing the law. But like I said, back in the 1980s, the war on drugs, it started in the 1970s, but the war on drugs was by by Nixon's account, designed to oppress people, designed to hurt people, demonizing marijuana when the stats suggest that whites and blacks and Hispanics all use drugs and marijuana in particular at the same rate. And yet you have people, officers, going into these neighborhoods arresting people for possession of marijuana, distribution of marijuana, or cocaine and crack cocaine when it's the exact same substance. But right. You have black people or Hispanic people getting longer sentences than their white counterparts because crack, for whatever reason, holds a heavier sentence, although it's the exact same substance.
Right.
And you have to wonder and ask yourself, now, why is that? Why is it that someone who is in possession of pure cocaine would get a lesser sentence than those who are in possession or distribution of crack cocaine? It doesn't make sense. Unless you have one area with one demographic that typically provides one type of drug and another given another type of drug. So, sorry, I know I'm long-winded on that subject, but it's something that I have to live with and something that I'm passionate about. So,
right. And which is why I already know. I mean, we've conversed before, so I kind of knew you was going to, I knew you would just go. So, I mean, it's exactly what I want, because the truth that has been perpetrated right now is it's a lie. I mean, people joke around all the time about, like, when did you know, this was that, or when did you know that this was for that, or when did you know that this meant this and all of that, you know, and people are like, today when you posted this, or, right. You know what I'm saying? We black folks can't do that any longer. Black folks can't keep listening to the narratives that are being pushed and that have been pushed. It's unfortunate, but every black person that doesn't know or doesn't understand needs to come to a full awakening of that the truth that they hold, even about their own history, is a lie. You know, that it is a lie, and white people are perpetrating that lie. Right. The system that is in place is there to push these narratives.
Right.
And this is where it stemmed from. This is where it came, the real history,
right.
The real truth of the matter. I don't know that I've ever had anybody sit down and talk to me about overseer and officer. I'm just going to be honest. And if you can't understand generationally how that system is still exactly in place, then this is why we need to have these conversations. This is why Jeremy Bonner needs to know his history enough to share it with his people, to say this is the reality of what is. Because once you understand something, once you understand at least the nature of something, you might not understand it in the capacity that how could they do it, but if you understand part of the why they do it, it is then that there can be some liberation.
Right.
You know, then that black folks can start saying, oh, this is why, and then they can come up with something that counteracts that to recreate. Well, I shouldn't say recreate, because there never truly was, but then to create at least some type of balance, you know, where these things aren't happening. But I don't know how that would happen. I just know that it has to, that black folks at some point have to start sticking up for themselves and saying to these white people who are doing these atrocities, you know, we're done. Like, we're completely over, okay? Done, finished, kaput. No longer, we're not gonna tolerate the phone calls and the harassment and the N-word, and we're not gonna do any of those. You know, we're just not.
Well,
this isn't the 60s and, you know.
Right, so I was in the military, and we had what we call soft targets and hard targets. And I think that what we have to do is make ourselves very hard targets. I mean, very hard targets. And what I mean by that is there are things within our community that we need to learn how to do. And we need to learn what to value and what not to value. We need to stop and it's not all of us. It's just it's certain. There are certain factions within my group that are toxic, but we don't recognize toxicity because it's something that we've always eaten. Exactly. When I became like 27, 28, I stopped eating pork because I learned and understood that it wasn't good for me to eat. Not because of a religious thing. It just, this pork is not conducive to my well-being. So I'm not. And so I think that while rap and hip hop were originally designed to be a positive outlet for our community, I think there's more to life than talking about pussy and chains and guns and violence and what you gonna do to your fellow black men that is not uplifting. I think that there is more to life than those things. I think that we as a people have to learn to get involved in our cities and have a real vision for what we want and have a united voice for what we want in our cities, right? If you look at Chicago, right, the mayor of Chicago is a black woman. It's a gay black woman. That's a double minority, right? Actually triple. If you think about the fact that she's black, a woman, and gay. And yet it's one of the most violent cities in the United States, and it should not be, right? What's going on where, you know, a black man or a black woman doesn't see the value of life in his fellow person? Why? How do you look at another person of color and not see yourself, see their humanity? Right? It's the same thing that the police are doing, except we're doing it to ourselves. And I think that we have to get involved in our own communities and say, you know what, this is unacceptable. This is we are better than this. We want a higher standard of living, right? Mm-hmm. People talk about black on black crime. Well, I'm not necessarily screaming that. I'm just talking about black on black value. Right. Because we have to really value ourselves. You know, whenever we talk about, you know, police brutality, there's always somebody that stands up and says, what about black on black crime? While that happens, you expect for the criminal to be the criminal. What you don't expect or find acceptable is when the police officer is the criminal.
Right.
Right. Like they're supposed to be held to a higher standard. They're supposed to enforce the law with equity and with equality, right? But they're not. One of the things that we as a people can do is get involved in our city council. We can get involved at the city level, the county level, the state level. But that takes education. We have to value becoming doctors. We have to value becoming lawyers. We have to be involved in our own communities and neighborhoods. If everybody is a doctor and everybody is a lawyer, it's going to be, and everybody is a police officer, right, it's going to be very difficult to oppress and oversee that mm-hmm. neighborhood, right?
Exactly.
Because these same people who are shouting that blue lives matter and all lives matter, these people are our doctors, these people are our supposed lawyers, these people are our judges, mm-hmm. these police officers, right? And so mm-hmm. if we infiltrate the system by legal means,
right,
there's really not much they can do to us because they're gonna know better. Like, look, that person is a lawyer, that person is a doctor, and it's unfortunate that both of them, my friend was killed because I think he was gonna be one of those type of people that was gonna be very powerful in the community. When we talk about a victim mentality, I do believe that the victim mentality exists. Extent that we have a responsibility to look past the barriers and the obstacles in our way, and that we just happen to have to try much harder than the next man, because if there's anything that's worth fighting for, is freedom, and the only way we get that is if we liberate ourselves through positions in the community.
I absolutely agree. 100%. I believe in segregation, but with integration.
Exactly.
What you're saying makes absolute sense to me. And, you know, if more people could see that aspect of it, you know what I mean? And And it's a perfect, really, way to end this segment, because at the end of the day, that's all that this, all of us are doing, is about freedom. Freedom from our past, freedom from our pain, freedom from our wounds, freedom from our blackness, freedom from our whiteness. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's really what we are all trying to accomplish, at least the ones who are woke enough to see what's happening. You know, this is why I'm doing it, you know, to free my children. And I can't separate my children out from anybody. I can't say, well, my kids are more important than your kids, or my kids are this. What I can say is that my seeds are, you know, my seeds can't breed. Mm. You know, I say that as many times as I want to. I'm not pulling anybody else into my story. I am specifically speaking for my story. And my story is my kids can't breed. And they belong to a whole group of beautiful, brilliant, amazing, royal gods and goddesses that can't fucking breathe.
Right.
And that's not acceptable to me as they mama.
Right.
It's not. And I'm not just going to fight for freedom for them. I'm going to fight freedom for all Black folks, because y'all all belong to my seeds, and my seeds belong to all of y'all. That's the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not separating myself out from that. And I truly believe that what you're doing on the teacup, and I don't just mean for this, you know, I want people to understand this is just a segment for the sexual assault. That's not all that Jeremy talks about on here. You know, look him up. I'm going to put his links up under here so that you can follow him and listen to him and listen to everything. Don't just assume this is all about one thing, because the teacup is definitely a much broader spectrum than that. And, you know, share his story, share my story, share our story. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you and I both, you know, want the same things, and there's no other better way, at least you and I with our talking asses, know to do that than to allow people to speak, because that's kind of clearly how we do what we do and how we heal our wounds,
right,
you and I.
Right.
By talking.
Exactly.
So I appreciate you coming on the show so much. I mean, I really enjoyed the conversation. I always do when we speak. We have really good conversations about a lot of really good things. And I'm grateful that I ran across your post, and that, you know, I'm grateful that you came on the show. And, you know, again, what you're doing is so important, Jeremy. And if people don't tell you or you don't know, I'm telling you now, you know, just keep up the good fight. It's appreciated, it's acknowledged, and people see you and they listen.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm humbled that you allowed me to come onto the show today. Thank you.
Absolutely. I appreciate everybody who showed up today. You know what I'm going to say. I love you, and I believe in you, and I will see you next time. Peace.